Here. Did you turn the heat on last night?
Did not.
Okay.
But it's kind of that weird thing, you know, where it's like, I'm not ready for the heat. But so we just closed up our house and it was fine.
Yeah. There was a fire last night down in we had a little fire in the fireplace.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that was after I fell asleep because I didn't quite feel it. So
yeah,
I still like a little chill, you know?
Oh, heck yeah. Especially when sleeping. Mm-hmm. And it is going to be chilly over the next couple of days. You've probably already noticed that we're in a bit of a cold front this week. As Tornado Bob said on Tuesday, it is just a front. It sounds like it's going to be warming up again next week. Mm-hmm. The warm up is going to start on Saturday already, into the upper 50s and low 60s on Saturday. But today, a good chance for some showers, highs 50 to 57. Tonight, showers are likely again, lows in the low 40s. A little windy overnight tonight, up to 25 miles an hour. And then Friday, mostly cloudy, highs in the mid to upper 50s.
Support for KEXE comes from Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital, home to an experienced OBGYN team that provides comprehensive women's health services, including maternity and advanced gynecology care, all in Grand Rapids. GrandItasca.org.
You're listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KPXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. The Trump administration is asking the U.S. Supreme Court for an expedited ruling on President Trump's sweeping tariffs and whether the president has the right to impose them under federal law. The administration is asking the High Court to reverse a ruling from a federal appeals court that determined the tariffs were illegal but left them in place until mid-October. Tariffs are the centerpiece of the president's trade policies. The Solicitor General is asking the Supreme Court to hear arguments in early November. Secretary of State Marco Rubio says the Trump administration will continue to use military strikes to go after boats carrying illegal drugs to the U.S., as it did Tuesday when a small vessel was destroyed off the coast of Venezuela. NPR's Michelle Kellerman says Rubio issued the warning during a trip to Mexico City.
Secretary Rubio says the military strike was meant to send a signal to those the U.S. considers narco-terrorists. Gone are the days that they might lose some of their cargo in an interdiction. The president might decide to just blow them up, as he did on Tuesday.
We're not going to sit back anymore and watch these people sail up and down the Caribbean like a cruise ship. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen anymore.
He was speaking alongside his Mexican counterpart after signing an agreement to boost security cooperation to combat the drug trade and illegal migration. Mexican Foreign Minister Juan Ramon de la Fuente stressed that this cooperation is based on mutual respect for sovereignty and territorial integrity. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Mexico City.
The White House says President Trump plans to speak with Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky today about the ongoing war with Russia. It's unclear when Trump will next speak to Russian President Vladimir Putin, though Trump said yesterday it would be within the next few days. Maryland's governor and the mayor of Baltimore say, like Chicago, they oppose the idea of President Trump deploying National Guard troops to the city to combat crime. Scott Massioni with member station WYPR says some residents of Baltimore took to the streets yesterday to voice their objections.
The National Guard not welcome here!
Baltimore residents pulled together an overnight protest after President Trump once again threatened to send the National Guard into the city, claiming it would lower crime. Kara McDonald was one of the protesters in the crowd.
We all see the stats in the news about how crime has been decreasing over the past 30 years here in Baltimore. I think there are real strategies that are working. I don't think the National Guard is going to solve anything that the city isn't already solving for itself.
Trump's comments come as the city records historic decreases in violent crimes, including homicides. Last month, the city saw 7 homicides, the lowest for that month in half a century. For NPR News, I'm Scott Massioni in Baltimore.
This is NPR News from Washington. Survivors of Maine's deadliest mass shooting and family members of those wounded and killed are suing the federal government. They argue the attack nearly 2 years ago was preventable and accuse the U.S. Army of negligence. Patty White with Maine Public Radio reports.
In October of 2023, Army Reservist Robert Card walked into two separate businesses in Lewiston, a bowling alley and then a bar, and used an assault rifle to kill 18 people and injure 13 others. Attorney Travis Brennan, who represents the plaintiffs, says the U.S. Army knew months beforehand that Card had become delusional, had a hit list, and had threatened to commit a mass shooting.
Despite every possible warning sign raised by Card's behavior, the Army failed at every turn to act.
An internal investigation by the Army found that unit leaders took action to address Card's deteriorating mental health, but also acknowledged a series of failures. For NPR News, I'm Patty White in Lewiston, Maine.
The last surviving child of author and Nobel laureate Ernest Hemingway has died. Patrick Hemingway was 97 years old. His grandson says he died at his home in Bozeman, Montana. There was no winning ticket for last night's Powerball lottery jackpot. The prize is now up to at least $1.7 billion for Saturday night's drawing. It's the third largest jackpot in U.S. lottery history. The last time all six Powerball numbers were matched was May 31st. I'm Dave Mattingly, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Visit St. Pete, Clearwater, Florida, where visitors can unwind on white sand beaches and dine at restaurants. More at visitspc.com. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
But I can't help looking back in, wondering if I was born in the wrong time. There's something inside is pulling me like a magnet, drop a needle that I can't stop me. Give me that magic, man, I gotta have it.
That's new. That's right. It is new music from Young Gun Silver Fox. They've had some albums out over the years that have dabbled in some yacht rock sounds, and they're back with a little disco.
Sounded like roller skating.
Stevie and Sly. Heck yeah. That's some great skating music right there.
It's very, very smooth, turning around, backwards skating. Yeah.
Going around those circles.
It's 8:11. You're tuned into People Powered KAXE. We would like to thank Lady Sippers NA Bottle Shop for their support in downtown Deer River. Itasca County's only NA bottle shop, offering ready-to-drink options, ingredients for craft cocktails, gifts, and more. Info available at ladysippers.com.
It's a big weekend in Grand Rapids this weekend with First Friday events, Grand Rapids River Fest, lots of live music across the town, and other events going on. Tomorrow night is also a big celebration at Old Central School in Grand Rapids. We've got a crew of folks from Old Central School joining us right now. I think it'd be easiest if you guys just went around and said your name and kind of who you're with Old Central School.
I can start. Ashley Brubaker. I own True North Salon and Spa in Old Central School, as well as I am the manager of Old Central School.
And I'm Casey McGuire. I own Navigate North Coaching in Old Central School.
I'm Dana Butler, and I'm a board member on Itasca Pride, and we have a space in Old Central School.
Hi, my name is Sydney. I'm from Celadon Garden Pottery, and I'm opening the Glaze Garden grand opening tomorrow.
Grand opening. Okay, so let's start with you, Ashley. So Old Central School itself has a big celebration this weekend.
Yeah, so we are celebrating the 130th birthday. We're going to do a sing-along at 5:30. And that is going to include party hats and cake, like you do for a birthday party.
For a building, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. I mean, she's looking good. And I don't know why I keep calling her a she. I shouldn't gender her, but she really is, like, you know, she likes attention and she's beautiful. So she's and she's 130, and we're going to celebrate
that. Worthy of being celebrated. Mm-hmm. Love that. So First Friday, there's always a lot going on downtown. What kinds of things what do you guys have going on at the building tomorrow night?
So for Navigate North Coaching, we are an independent coaching practice that focuses on supporting individuals who are ready for their next move, whether it be in life or in work. So tomorrow we will be having intention bracelets. So we will be there as you are coming into this new seasonal shift and thinking about what intentions you'd like to set. We're going to weave them together in positivity. So we'll have kits if you want to take them home, or we'll be there in the moment to support you and make them with all of our guests.
Casey, where are you in Old Central School?
I am on level 2 in Suite 202.
Okay. And Dana, what's going on with Pride?
We are really excited to have what we call our rec room, which is the Rainbow Empowerment Community Center. And we're on the garden level. You will hear it called the basement, but it's the garden level.
Yes,
be nice about that. It's our grand opening for us. So we have rainbow cupcakes. We have a community art project we've been working on. We're going to continue with that. We're highlighting, we have a little library we've started, a little free library. We're building up our mutual aid resources. So we have like free clothes and free food and things for the community. And then highlighting the events that we have coming up, because we've got a number of really cool things happening. So
good.
Yeah.
Huh. What about you, Sydney?
So at the Glaze Garden grand opening, I'm really excited to announce the comeback of a Glaze Your Own Pottery studio. Break Time used to be here and unfortunately had to close. And so I am so excited to bring this back and have been met with such amazingness from the community about bringing it back. So you just come in, choose your piece, flex your imagination, and I'll be doing it from 10 to 7 tomorrow. You know, whether it's a fun night out, a family activity, or the perfect gift, the Glaze Garden is your place to relax, create, and connect.
So the pieces are already made.
Correct.
Okay.
This reminds me of, like, I was just talking with my cousin about this, the family tradition of my mom and my aunts and my grandma all going to these classes together. And we all now, as they're, you know, we've lost a lot of them, but we have those pieces in our houses that are kind of retro and cool. Mm-hmm. And it meant so much that they all went together to do it, you know?
It's really an amazing experience to come together as a family and just, you know, have some fun together. You know, you find that you miss that in your house. I mean, I've with two kids of my own, I also find I'm looking to do stuff together with, I've got an 8 and a 4-year-old. So I'm always looking for something for all of us to do together. So yeah, and we're officially opening our doors tomorrow. So anytime Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 4 normally, and then on till 7 on first Fridays, you can just come, bring your family and come in and just glaze your piece. I'll be hosting tomorrow Baked by Ashley and Evermore Grove, sourdough and laser art artisans. So
nice.
It'll be a fun time.
Samples of the sourdough or selling the sourdough?
Selling
probably.
The sourdough.
Okay. Yes.
So, okay. Ashley, for you, what does it mean that Old Central School is, there's a lot more going on and it's really lively? What do you think it brings to our town?
I mean, obviously, Old Central School is beautiful and it is this landmark that everybody kind of knows. But the fact that the energy has shifted so hard, you know, we were kind of talking while we were sitting here before that we kind of took a hiatus, excuse me, during COVID. It was kind of our like lowest point. And I've been in the building for 11 years now, and seeing this shift and this kind of like, you know, re-energizing of, you know, not only like the rooms being full, but like it's tangible in the building right now. And so for me, I love energy, and specifically I love collaborating. And so it's just been so nice to like, you know, go upstairs and see Casey or go into Pride or stop, pop over at the Glaze Garden and be like, I have a crazy idea.
Because that happens always.
That happens most days. And I was really missing that piece, which is why I had chose Old Central School in the first place, because it was full when I moved in. And so I've really been missing people and energy and people to do weird stuff with. So I'm just like beyond excited to have people back in the building and to be able to celebrate having that kind of community space. And, you know, it's Old Central School is a public building and we have lots of seating and lots of, you know, cool nooks and crannies for people to come in and hang out in. And then, you know, now we have places to do art. And I think people are leaning in hard to art and collaboration. And now we have this great new energy. So it means a ton to me to kind of see this rebirth of the building.
I want to hear also what True North is doing, but we just got a text from Emily in Des Moines who said, I love hearing about Old Central School's 130th birthday. I remember when she turned 100. Is that when the yellow brick sidewalk went in? I grew up going to the first grade restaurant with my grandma. Was that in Old Central School? Must have been.
That's the space I'm in now.
Oh, it is?
Yes. I cleaned off a, I'm guessing, you know, 40-year-old grease. So True North actually just moved from Suite 112 over to Suite 102.
Just across the hall.
We're now inhabiting two spaces and potentially going to be renting out the third space that are all adjoining. We have just been expanding and growing and it's been fantastic. And so we needed a little bit of room. And now we have Lena James Permanent Jewelry will be hosting, and we're hosting ReThrift Pop-Up, which is also my store. So lots of...
And hair tinsel.
And hair tinsel, yes. And we'll be doing hand massages, and the first 10 people into the salon get a special gift. And then when you show up tomorrow, you're going to find out what our discount is. So we will be having a discount, but it's secret unless they're there. And then... yeah, so ReThrift is like a curated pop-up thrift store. They'll be open tomorrow as well.
Full disclosure, I want to be the first one in the shop.
Yeah. I don't know if that's allowed.
Is that cheating?
Might be.
It might be.
You have a memory of Old Central School. We'd love to hear from you as well. Just like Emily from Des Moines, you can text us at 218-326-1234.
Well, the flowers are popping outside Old Central School right now. It looks so beautiful, and excited to check out everything that there is to offer tomorrow night. We also did have a write-up about other things that you can check out in Grand Rapids going on this whole weekend. of Grand Rapids Riverfest. The town is alive this weekend, so get out and about, check it out. You can find out that right up at kaxe.org. Thanks for coming in, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
This is the Set List on KAXE, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. Grand Rapids Riverfest is here this Saturday, September 6th at the Public Library Amphitheater close to the banks of the Mississippi River. Here's info on all four artists on the lineup. This year's headliner is Courtney Barnett, an Australian indie rocker acclaimed for her witty observations on the everyday and mundane, all in her trademark deadpan delivery. Besides her songwriting, Barnett is a modern guitar hero whose playing ranges from delicate to total shredding and makes her live show can't miss. Just before Courtney is the outlaw country maverick Margot Price, fresh off the release of Hard-Headed Woman, her fantastic new fifth album. Since her 2016 debut, Price has been a breath of fresh air in the country music world. Her current band features flat-picking prodigy and vocalist Logan Ledger, and they easily take listeners to the funky, rocking, and psychedelic corners of country music. Playing second this year is rising Canadian roots musician Jeremy Albino, my pick for this year's biggest surprise. If Albino is new to you, you're in for a retro-rocking and magnetic stage performer who brings to mind the early days of rock and roll music. This year's opener is Minnesota's own Alan Sparhawk, a northern Minnesota institution since the mid-90s with acclaimed indie rock band Low. His most recent project was a collaboration with fellow Duluth musicians Trampled by Turtles, a cathartic album that navigated his grief after the death of life and musical partner Mimi Parker. Now his live band includes his son Cyrus on bass, and Dave from Trampled by Turtles will be joining him this Saturday. Gates open at 2 p.m. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
It's 8:22. You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show. It's People Powered, KAXE. We did get a text in from Mickey. She says, good morning. If there's room in the show for a shout out, the Itasca County 4-H Horse Kids are headed down to Cannon Falls today to compete at the State Fair competition. It is normally at the State Fairgrounds, but it's in Cannon Falls this year due to renovations at the Coliseum. Gaming Kids compete Friday and Saturday. Pleasure classes, Western and English, compete on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. In addition to the 9 kids that she sent a photo of, there's one more teen who'll be competing in horse judging. Wow, they look fierce.
They do. Remember, wasn't it last year the 4-H'ers went to, there was that group of 4-H'ers that were leaders in 4-H? I'm misremembering.
I think you're right.
I think I'm somewhere yeah. along the lines.
Yeah, had gone to the national convention or
That's
something.
That's right.
And, yep.
So thank you, Mickey, for that update and for the text. You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show. I'm Kari Hedlund here with Heidi Holton. Support for KAXE comes from Great Lakes Aquarium with its new exhibit, Lava to Lakes, offering a discovery into what was here before the land we call Minnesota, including sharks, jellyfish, and giant prehistoric fish. Hours and tickets at glaquarium.org.
We'll have local news coming up for you with the Up North Report. But first, A. Martinez is talking with Washington Post sports columnist Neil Greenberg about what to watch for as the NFL season kicks off tonight. Stay tuned.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm A. Martinez. The NFL season kicks off tonight in Philadelphia. The defending champion Eagles host the Dallas Cowboys. And week one is going global as Kansas City meets the LA Chargers Friday in Sao Paulo, Brazil, the league's second kickoff in that city. Now to sort all the early storylines, we're joined by Neil Greenberg, sports columnist and data analyst at the Washington Post. So Neil, let's start off with that first game of the season, the Super Bowl champs going up against the Cowboys, their division rival. What are you watching for tonight?
I'm watching for Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Jalen Hurts. He's a little bit of a polarizing figure. The analytics love him. The more subjective ways of grading him are a little more harsh. Matter of fact, they just had a big poll with executives, scouts, etc., and he was almost put into the second tier of quarterbacks.
What? He's a champion. What more does he have to do?
Yeah, he's a polarizing figure. But it's a great game. I'm curious to see how Dallas does after they traded their best player, Micah Parsons, after a tumultuous offseason. So it's going to be a really good game, I think, but maybe a little bit lopsided.
All right, now beyond tonight, what are you watching for this season? Are the Chiefs, the Kansas City Chiefs, are they built for another run?
There's some cracks showing. I mean, they're getting older. I mean, Travis Kelce is nearing the end of his career. He's beginning his new life, but his football life might be coming to an end. So it's going to be tough for them, I think, to keep going at the high level they were. They're certainly a contender, but I think they're starting to make way for other Super Bowl hopefuls like Baltimore, Buffalo, Philadelphia.
Or I knew you were about to say the Chargers, too, in those Super Bowl contender lists. So speaking of Travis Kelce, the Super Bowl is set for February in Santa Clara, California. Travis Kelce will not be playing in that game because my Chargers will be the AFC team in that game. But what are the chances? What are the chances that Travis Kelce will be watching his fiancée, Taylor Swift, perform the halftime show?
Yeah, that's starting to get a little bit of buzz. Roger Goodell mentioned that it's a maybe. It certainly makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's pretty easy to connect the dots as to why Taylor Swift would be at the top of the list. Not only because she's a mega superstar, but obviously her football connection. I think it'd be an amazing show. Probably see Travis Kelce on stage. If your Chargers did happen to make it to the Super Bowl, maybe he would do a little skit up there. But I think there's probably a better chance that he's not able to watch her than the Chargers, but we can save that for a different show.
I mean, think about it. I mean, it's the halftime show. The album that's coming out is Life of a Show Girl. I mean, to me, you're a data analyst. I mean, it makes the sense. The data makes sense that she's performing in the halftime show.
Oh, I think you just connected all the dots. I think that this is going to happen. I think we just broke some news.
Yeah, except that you're not with me on the Chargers thing, which is very disappointing, Neil. Very disappointing.
I can get on board. Keep talking. I'll get on board.
All right, one more thing really quick. Travis Hunter, Jacksonville Jaguars, a defensive back and wide receiver. He's going to play both positions this year. I don't think that's ever been done, really, a long time ago.
Well, yeah, Deion Sanders did it. He played both sides. It's exciting. He's an electric player. He's another player that's certainly going to be a storyline this season. How many reps he gets on offense, how many reps he gets on defense, and then how well does he do? Yeah. I think this is great for the sport, especially after what we've seen in baseball.
Cool. All right, Neil Greenberg, sports columnist at the Washington Post. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm E. Martinez.
And I'm Michelle Martin.
Football tonight.
I'm not going to be watching.
Me either, but the Lynx play tonight. I'll tell you that.
I'm not going to be watching that either.
I know. I will be.
I know. I'm happy for you.
Thank you, Kari. That's very nice of you. I'm trying to see. Oh, they're in Las Vegas tonight. So they're playing the Las Vegas Aces. This is going to be a tough one. Starts at 9 o'clock.
Vegas.
So I'm going to watch the recording.
Okay.
The next day. But Lynx 32-8, and they're playing the Aces 26-14 for them. So they have won the home court advantage for the finals and playoffs and everything. The Lynx, Nope, we're not quite there yet. Still some, but I don't know how the math works on that, but I know, Atlanta Dream are also, they also made the mark. We know they're going to be in the playoffs, and we'll see what happens.
Okay. Guess I'll tune in tomorrow to the sports page to find out more.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't have watched it. So
oh, yeah, that's right. You wouldn't have screened it.
Let us know, though, are you following the Lynx this season? You can text 218-326-1234.
Or if you're pumped for NFL tonight.
That's right. How about the Stud Buds? I mean, they're amazing.
Sure. I now know of them. Mm-hmm. Of yesterday. You can pay nothing. Not yesterday. Last week. You know what I meant.
Yeah.
You know what I meant. You can pay nothing to get rid of that old or damaged car and get it towed away. Even if it doesn't run, your donation of a car, boat, or other vehicle is tax deductible. You can save time and money while defending the KAXE programs you love. Call 855-277-2346 for more details.
Thanks also goes out to Cass Soil and Water Conservation District. They offer the Managing Your Woodlands for Wildlife workshop. That is tomorrow or Saturday from 9:30 to 11 at the Walker Area Community Center. Registration available by texting the word woods to 218-833-2492.
I know we've got the Up North report coming, Heidi, but I just want to prep you beforehand because I want to ask you about what your thoughts are on savory oatmeal after the Up North report.
Like with bacon on it?
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources says water sample analysis of several St. Louis County lakes found measurable amounts of zebra mussel larvae. The presence of larvae known as veligers in Lake Vermilion, Lake Cabotegama, Crane Lake, and Namekin Lake indicates a reproducing adult population of the aquatic invasive species, even though no adult zebra mussels have yet been confirmed. The water sampling was part of a long-range monitoring project. The DNR says it's not unusual for veligers to be discovered before adult zebra mussels, especially in large lakes, citing Rainy Lake's veliger discovery in 2021 with no adult zebra mussels yet confirmed. The City of Bemidji and Northern Township hosted a joint meeting as part of the administrative trial over boundaries around Lake Bemidji. More than 100 attended the hearing at the Sanford Event Center last week. City leaders made the case that annexing land around the lake would best address the decades-long goal of eliminating septic systems. Northern Township also presented its plan for becoming a city, firming up its boundary and building a separate sewage plant for the northern and eastern sides of the lake. Bemidji Mayor George Prince made a final offer to the Northern Town Board before the trial begins later this month.
Highlights of our offer would include city-installed water and sewer utilities around the lake, delayed hookup plan and deferred connection fees, a generous tax reimbursement tied to phased annexation.
Northern Township Administrator Chris Lane says they have listened to constituents and are determined to move forward with their plan.
We've been down this road several times over the past 4 years talking about annexation, and every single time we've been basing our actions off of your guys' feedback, which has been clear and overwhelmingly, we do not want annexation.
The city's plan includes annexing some of the most valuable homes in the area along Lake Bemidji's Gold Coast, amounting to somewhere around 30% of the township's tax base. Consultant Matt Stark with Baker Tilly, among the city's experts, says the annexation would relieve the township of expenses, like maintaining streets and supporting the Borough Fire Association.
Fire dues are based on value, so I anticipate that the city of Bemidji would be taking over $60,000 or $65,000 worth of the fire costs.
Some of the residents within the contested area expressed some frustration with both local governments, like Susan Whalen.
We haven't been contacted as far as what we want, and it's frustrating. I mean, we haven't been contacted by the city, we haven't been contacted really by the township to ask us specifically.
The trial will begin with Northern Townships detailing its case the week of September 29th, with the public hearing set for September 30th at the Beltrami County Fairgrounds. Bemidji will detail its case the following week, with a public hearing set for October 8th at the Sanford Event Center. All 11 flags of Minnesota's sovereign tribal nations will fly at the state capitol starting this Friday. The flag-raising ceremony in St. Paul will celebrate the permanent tribal flag plaza on the grounds of the capitol. The project was spearheaded by Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, a White Earth Band member herself, and was initially requested during the governor's tribal summit in 2021. The project was developed in close coordination with tribal nations and the state legislature, which provided funding for it in 2023. The Capitol Architecture and Planning Board says the plaza honors the unique government-to-government relationship between the state and tribes sharing Minnesota's geographic boundaries. The ceremony Friday will begin at 9 a.m. in the lower mall of the Capitol grounds. St. Louis County Public Health and its partners are presenting the first ever Community Connect event for the Ely area on Tuesday. The event will offer a meal and transportation to and from the Ely area community hub from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. via Arrowhead Transit. Resources and services will be offered for housing, children and family, health insurance, mental health and substance use disorder, warrant resolutions, vaccine and disease education, and more. The event is based on the national project Homeless Connect, which began in 2004 in San Francisco and has since spread across the country. That's it for the Up North Report. Find more of our stories at KAXE.org, where you can also find content from our music, morning show, and Phenology teams. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
It's Thursday morning on People Powered KAXE. 8:35. Coming up, we're going to be hearing from our staff librarian, Tammy Bobrowski, as she talks to Anne-Marie Erickson about her new book that's out. Anne will be speaking. Anne-Marie will be speaking tonight at the McCrosty Arts Center about the new book.
Support for KAXE comes from The Sewing Room, hosting the Cultivating Communities Summit, a two-day gathering of community members with events focused on equity, connection, and community resilience. Taking place at the Geechee Zibi Center for the Arts in Brainerd, September 22nd and 23rd. More info at sewingroom, sewing.org. And we want to thank Sanford Health for their support with primary care locations in Bemidji and across the Upper Midwest. Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org.
Coming up at 9 o'clock, it is Headwaters with DJ Dang.
So, Heidi, before we listen to the Up North report, I prompted you with your thoughts on savory oatmeal. And I'll preface this by saying I've been really struggling. Okay, so at the age I'm at, everything that I'm seeing is like protein. Women need protein. You need so much protein and blah, blah, blah. We all know.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to figure out how to incorporate more protein into my breakfast because I've just kind of not been a breakfast eater lately and really struggling with something that is timely, like not so time intensive.
Right.
But fills me up and tastes good.
Right.
So I've been landing lately on some savory oatmeals and it's like, it feels a little life changing. I hope I stick with it because the one I had like this morning is steel cut oats.
Okay.
With how I've been doing it lately is sauteing some mushrooms in cumin and paprika.
Mm.
And then add some kale or spinach or whatever greens you've got and some garlic and then pour that over your oatmeal. And then do a fried egg on top.
Oh.
Then last week I made steel cut oats and lentils together with like turmeric, lots of other warm spices in the Instant Pot. That was also really good. I don't know how many times I could eat that one. I felt like that one I kind of overdid it maybe the first couple times. But so I'm dabbling in this world and
And by the protein and the one you had today, I think still the egg, right?
The egg, yes.
That's what you mean by that?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and also, you know, I think I, not that I get enough protein, but I also forget about needing fiber, you know, that we all need a lot of fiber as well. So you're getting that from the steel cut oats. So
steel cut oats also have protein.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, trying for that double whammy effect here, maybe. But
savory, so you're calling it savory oatmeal, not porridge.
No, but that's because I didn't really know what I think of porridge as the Three Bears.
Yeah. I know some
people. Or like people a malto meal type
who
thing.
Have totally convinced their children that porridge is the best thing ever and they have it every morning.
I'd like to know how because I've not been able to do that with my kids yet. And I also was a texture person as a kid and did not love the texture of oatmeal as a kid.
Okay.
But steel cut oats has that crunchy little nuttiness that I'm all about.
Well, I did have, I don't know then if texture is a big deal for you, if you would like this, but a friend had we were going away for the weekend. She did a congee dinner that comes out of like either Vietnam or Thailand. So it's a rice porridge.
Mm.
So it is simmered in broth and it breaks down into like a kind of thick and velvety consistency.
Oh, yeah.
But then you can have a whole bunch of other things that you can put on top of that. Like I see a recipe here with minced pork, crispy shallots, but you can have.
Oh, so savory. Because I grew totally up with savory. Rice mush at Christmas time.
Okay.
Which is.
It needs a different name.
No, but it's terrible. Never going to change. It's never going to change.
All right.
It's a family tradition. It is just white rice that is cooked in for hours in milk, and you just keep adding milk. You go through like 2 gallons of milk. And at the end, you put a dab of butter and some cinnamon and sugar in it. And it's for every Christmas Eve. That's what we have. And part of the meal. That's not our meal.
Yeah.
But so I do know that on a sweet side, but not a savory side.
Okay.
And it's probably not made in milk, I would assume, for the savory.
You know,
maybe
I don't,
a broth or a water.
Yeah,
or
that's
something.
What it says, a water or like a chicken broth or vegetable broth. I'm also seeing some recipes of, you know, here's a savory oatmeal. So this is the same kind of concept of congee. It's one of those where every culture has their own version of certain things. So with mushroom stock, scallion, cilantro, fried garlic, and poached egg on top.
Mm-hmm, that sounds similar to what I got going.
Here's the, it's looking like, so in Vietnamese culture, is that right? No, medieval Irish culture, the porridge, flavored with sautéed mustard greens, a common accompaniment to Irish meals. So if you make one of these, if you make a porridge, if you've convinced your children that they love the porridge, you can text us at 218-326-1234. It was a little smoother than I expected, you know, when I had the congee.
And yes.
So was at first a little bit of a, like, having to get used to that, but then...
You had to wrap your head around what this texture was going to be. Yeah. Yep. I understand that.
Yeah. Love to hear from you this morning. 218-326-1234.
We receive support from the Lake Country Journal, a magazine showcasing the beauty, landscapes, and people of Lake Country. The February-March issue publishes the winners of their annual photo contest, which are also displayed at the Brainerd Lakes Regional Airport. Submissions accepted all year round at lakecountryjournal.com.
Time now for a conversation from What We're Reading with our staff librarian, Tammy Bobrowski, about tonight's reading at the McCroskey Arts Center at 7 p.m.
Anne Marie Erickson is a writer and longtime resident of Grand Rapids. She and her husband, Dick Kane, lived an intentional and simple life in a cabin they built together in the North Woods. Around age 66, Dick, a man known for his intellect, inquisitiveness, and love of language, began to show signs of memory loss beyond the degree of natural aging and was diagnosed with dementia. Anne Marie Erickson's new book, In the Evening We'll Dance, was born out of her desire to make meaning out of Dick's 17-year-long decline leading up to his death in 2015. This book provides an insightful view into taking care of a spouse as their health declines, but this is also a love story. The story of Anne Marie and Dick, told in dreams, memories, reflection, and honesty, and in Anne Marie's compelling and lyrical voice. Here's our What We're Reading interview with Anne Marie Erickson. I wonder if you want to just start out by talking about how did you and Dick meet?
My husband and I met through a mutual friend who was quite a bit older than I. He and his wife were friends. And I had told Dick Franklin, was his name, that I was tired of men my own age. I was 24 because they weren't mature enough. And so they didn't know what they wanted in life and how could they really love someone if they didn't have a clear idea of themselves and their lives. And so I said, if you know a man who's a little older who is available, I would like to meet him. And he called me months later and said, a good friend of mine's marriage ended and we're having a party and can he pick you up and bring you to the party? And so my sister was living with me then and I was getting ready to go and I was running late. And so I said, go talk to him while I finish getting ready. And she answered the door. And then when I opened the door into the living room, I was living on the West Bank in Minneapolis at the time in a duplex, but I opened the door to the living room and he turned around and that was it. And I had dated a lot of men, some quite seriously prior. So I was not a naive young thing. I just knew I'd met my husband. There was something about him, and the conversation began and never quite ended from that moment on.
That's the stuff of stories.
It is.
Let's talk about the book. It is called In the Evening We'll Dance, a memoir and essays on love and dementia. And in particular, in the essay, We Built It.
You tell us how you and Dick had created a home and a life together up here in the North Woods. You built a log cabin. You strived to live a life that was simple and deliberate. At times, I have to say, reading this, your lives felt almost idyllic to me. Eventually, though, Dick is diagnosed with dementia, and you write that we needed to construct yet another new life. What did that new life look like for you both?
The new life was challenging at times, just like living in a simple house in the North Woods would be, when you have to use an outhouse in the middle of the winter and so on. And it brought us back down to the rudimentary form of life in a way, because as his dementia worsened, there were problems with toileting, for example. There was a simplification of our lives in a way. We were down to basics again, as we had been when we were hauling and heating our water. And it tried my patience at times. And it wasn't until I was well into writing the essays, actually, that I realized that the life we had in our log house was a proving ground or a test for me. And it helped me to be able to develop the skills that I needed in dealing with his dementia. So it was preparation, and I never thought of it that way until it must have been three quarters of the way through his dementia, and that was 17 years long. So I'm a slow learner sometimes.
Thinking back, what were some of the earliest signs that you recall that led to that diagnosis?
The first thing I noticed was that he was having problems with a checkbook, and he was much more adept with numbers than I am. And we had two checkbooks. One was personal, and we had a little writing, photography, and graphic design business together, and the other one was our business book. And both of them were getting screwed up. And so I had to take over the checkbooks. And he said to me, I seem to be making more mistakes. And he didn't like it, but he said, I will be making more mistakes as I get older. And he said, I'm not complaining to you, which I thought was interesting. It wasn't a point of argument with him. And so I took over the checkbooks, and then he began repeating himself. He would be telling a story, and half an hour later, he'd tell the same story. So that was another sign.
I think you say in your book that the kind of dementia that Dick had, it allowed him to be a little more occasionally cognizant of who he was and who you are.
Very much so. I mean, a big part of a central chapter, if you want to call it that, central essay in the book is, I'm my own person. He retained a sense of himself. He also retained his abilities to speak quite well. In fact, he was tested early on by a neurologist, and she gave him a list, said, tell me as many words as you can that begin with the letter B or D or whatever it was. And he more than doubled the cutoff line. You know, I think she finally had to have him stop. And that, plus some other observations, made people think that he didn't have Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And I checked against the list, and out of the long list of possible indicators, there were only two that seemed applicable to him. So it took a long time to actually get some kind of a diagnosis. But during that time, his vocabulary was excellent. And his syntax was correct in his sentences. And then gradually he would be unable to come up with a word, so he'd make up these wonderful words to replace the word he couldn't come up with. And then I started writing them down. But he knew me almost always. That's a very difficult question for a loved one to hear, and it's often asked of us, which is, does he still know you? It stops you in your tracks, Because what if the answer had been no? I mean, you know, you're in the grocery store and somebody asked you that question. And I could say quite honestly, almost always, he knows who I am. And so we continued to have a conversation in many ways throughout the dementia. But I worked with him. I mean, we did word play while we made the bed. We tossed rhyming words back and forth across the bed as we were making it together. I'd speak to him a few phrases in Spanish because we had lived in Spain for a year, just to keep the wheels turning in a way with him. I never talked down to him. I assumed the decaying I'd always known was still there. And I think that probably helped him then retain his abilities.
This is What We're Reading, and we're talking with Grand Rapids writer Anne Marie Erickson. Her new book is a memoir on love and dementia, and it's called In the Evening We'll Dance. In your essay, I'm Making More Mistakes, in particular, I wanted to talk to you about, you are talking about scientific pursuit versus storytelling, and I wonder if you actually would mind reading the excerpt at the bottom of page 59.
The essayist Maria Popova discusses ideas presented in Actual Minds, Possible Worlds by Jerome Bruner, a psychologist. She concludes that scientific pursuit is concerned with how to know truth, while a storyteller is concerned with the question of how to endow experience with meaning. Brunner explains that both are ways of knowing. Scientific analysis results in information, whereas stories produce meaning. I needed both ways of knowing. I turned to science for information, hoping it would reveal truths about the cause of Dick's dementia. And I turned to stories as a way of endowing our experience with meaning.
Thank you. So to me, this excerpt really captures what you have done with this book, drawing from science, but also psychology, philosophy, literature, music. There's all kinds of songs that the two of you know and sing together. And you somehow have combined all of this to tell the story of the two of you. Is that a good way of describing what you've done with this book?
Right. Yeah. It's like a tapestry in a way that incorporates what had made our lives together so rich all along. You know, the music, the art, the philosophy, the thinking, the spirituality, the science, all of it was part of our lives together. And so I tried to create something that resembled that in a way as I was trying to create meaning out of what was going on. It was the only way to stay sane in the middle of all of that because things were falling apart. And so how do you hold it together? And the best way I knew was to put words to it and try to make meaning out of it.
So Dick did pass away in 2015. And I'm just curious, how have you been?
How have I been? Oh, well, I endured the pandemic during that time. I've been my usual cheerful, joyful self in many ways. And that was a thing that he had written me this lovely, lovely note when he dedicated a book, a local history that he had written. He dedicated it to me. And he wrote about my joie de vivre despite my Norwegian-ness. And so I still have that. I mean, to lose that or to leave that behind would be impossible, actually, for me. It's just part of who I am. And so I, as much as I miss him and as much as he was the love of my life and as much as I miss living in the light of his love, it's that light maybe that I'm carrying in the way in which I live in the world now.
Anne Marie Erickson is a fiscal year 2025 recipient of a Creative Individuals Grant from the Minnesota State Arts Board. This activity is made possible by the voters of Minnesota through a grant from the Minnesota State Arts Board, thanks to a legislative appropriation by the Minnesota State Legislature, and by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. In the Evening We'll Dance is published by Holy Cow Press and will be available for sale starting August 20th. It's What We're Reading. I'm Tammy Bobrowski.
You can catch more book interviews at our website. Look for What We're Reading by Tammy Bobrowski. It's KAXE.org.
There is a good chance for some showers today. Increasing clouds, highs 50 to 57. Tonight, those showers are likely to continue with temperatures in the low 40s. Friday, mostly cloudy, highs in the mid to upper 50s. And then Saturday, Grand Rapids River Fest Day, officially recognized by all in Minnesota, I think.
What did you say it again?
Grand Rapids River Fest Day. I'm pretty sure the governor said it.
Yep, I think so.
Partly sunny, highs in the upper 50s to low 60s. So it's going to be a nice and cool fall day for you on Riverfest. We hope to see you there. Get your tickets at grandrapidsriverfest.com. There are still a few more opportunities to volunteer. If you'd like to get a free ticket, there are some opportunities that you can check out. The link is at grandrapidsriverfest.com. And then find the Get Involved button and hit the volunteers there. Don't hit the volunteers.
No, we don't feel like
that. Do not encourage that.
Not a good idea.
And no, I was just kidding.
No hitting in general.
I was just kidding about Governor Walz.
Okay.
There is not officially a proclamation yet.
He did do a proclamation as we celebrated 40 years of phonology. It was Phonology Day.
I know. Does that continue on each year? And what day was that?
I don't think so.
Oh, shoot.
One day.
All right.
But not positive on that. But we want to thank you so much as you helped us out as the federal funding was cut for all public media. And we had our emergency fundraiser this summer raising over $162,000. Hearing from so many people how having a media source like KAXE makes them feel better. It makes their lives more connected. Like one of our donors from Brainerd said, KEXE makes their whole listening area seem like our neighborhood. And we are looking for you. If you didn't get a chance to help us out then, we lose every year approximately 13% of our budget, about $200,000 was a given from the federal government, was promised already. And so we are looking at other sources. We're trying to build a different future, as is all of public media, but your help is still needed. The numbers of people who come forward is a big incentive to other funding sources that we go to.
That's true. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting that does distribute those funds is going to be closed by the end of this month. They will be shuttering their doors for the first time in 60 years on September 30th.
You can text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Another way to help out is get a ticket to Grand Rapids River Fest. That's a way to support this station. We hear from someone in Minneapolis who said, I love this station. I'm basically an evangelist for green cheese and the Phonology Report.
Man, when we were at the state fair a couple of weeks ago, green cheese was all everybody talked about.
Wow.
Got fans far and wide, that's for sure. Listeners, we receive support from Harmony Food Co-op, Bemidji's full-service downtown grocery store, offering people a variety of local organic fair trade and conventional items. Open daily from 8 to 8, more at harmonyfoods.coop, also on Facebook.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley, Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. People-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Thanks to you. Join us at KAXE.org.
And ahead of the weekend, as we were talking about earlier, there is a lot going on throughout northern Minnesota, and particularly in Grand Rapids around the Riverfest weekend. You can find a write-up there at KAXE.org, along with some interviews with artists that you will be seeing this weekend, and a link to a playlist to get you all prepped. Coming up next, it is Headwaters with DJ Dang. And then at 11, it is the World Cafe. And at 1 o'clock, Judy Gruey is your host for On the River. Right now, it is time for Headwaters on KAXE.